Welcome to Sector Head Spotlight. I'm your host, Robert McGrory. We're about to review the background and process of a hedge-eye sector head, as well as discuss some specific key themes pertinent to today's market conditions. If you'd like to learn more about their research,
go to hedgeye.com/research to subscribe.
Now, let's dive into this episode.
Good morning. Welcome to another episode. It's episode 2 of Sector Head Spotlight. Today, I have a pleasure to be sitting down with our Sector Head of Communications, Andrew Friedman, and where we're going to go through his process and some key themes that he wants to kind of communicate to Hedgeye Nation. So again, this is welcome, Andrew. Appreciate you being on here.
Hey, good to see you.
Absolutely. Yeah. For those that didn't catch the session we did, my first episode with Tom Tobin in late December, that's available in the arena as well for replay. And Andrew, as you know, I'm going to be sitting down with many of our colleagues and other sector heads over the next few weeks, couple of months, really. Is probably how, you know, it's going to take that amount of time because we got a number of them, right? There's only so many I can do every week, right?
Andrew, I know. And I think this is special too, right? Because this is this the first time you and I are doing on Hedgeye TV? You know,
correct. Yeah, you and I have spent some. Yeah, we spent many a time in Twitter Spaces, but not on Hedgeye TV. So, talk about it's going to be special. It's going
to
be a lot of fun.
First of many to come.
First of many, absolutely. This is again the whole concept here, Andrew. You and I've talked about this before, but it's really just to kind of get the folks, you're on the call right every day, and you know, many within Hedgeye Nation get a 5-minute clip of you kind of every morning, right?
So it's depends on how much Brian has to offer on the call.
exactly. But you know, the concept here though, Andrew, is really try to get dive a little deeper, get a little bit behind the scenes in terms of, you know, as I mentioned, your process, sort of what goes into how you think about your coverage list and the companies that get on there, and then sort of again just sort of some key themes to keep it a little bit more higher level as we kick off 2023 here. I know we've got a couple, I think you and I talked about maybe going through a couple slides from your themes deck from Q4, which I love. I mean, I love the way that you lay out kind of your process. So I'll leave it to you if you do. We want to jump into that right out of the gate, or kind of.
Yeah.
I guess the other. Yeah, I mean the other thing too, just from a background standpoint, Andrew, for those that aren't familiar with kind of how you maybe started here at Hedgeye and have come up through the ranks, would you mind maybe diving into that first?
Sure.
Yeah.
So I've been Hedgeye for over 8 years, kind of homegrown in that sense. I spent a few years right out of school working in institutional investment consulting role, which was really, I really enjoyed it, learned a ton. Basically doing investment manager due diligence with hedge funds and long only managers, kind of dive deep into the process and different processes and see what works, what doesn't work. Really, I think the most interesting part of that whole experience was just seeing how broader capital allocation decisions are made from an allocator standpoint, right? So, on this side and on the buy side, right, you're so focused on either your own book or your own fund and making individual security selections and how you're positioned. And really, like, there's this, beyond that, there's, so much more that goes on behind the scenes in terms of, if you have a $500 million endowment foundation, a billion-dollar pension fund, right? How those allocation decisions getting made between different asset classes, whether it's passive, active, and then what those allocators look for in terms of performance. And I got a lot of great exposure early on to working with boards and just all different aspects of the entire consulting realm. So that was really helpful. But I always wanted to do equity research and. For those listening, you could probably go onto Seeking Alpha and find some of my earlier work that I was doing back then, just to kind of as an avenue to get out what I've always wanted to do, just picking stocks. And so had the opportunity back in 2013, 2014 to come over to Hedgeye interviewing. Didn't have any connections with the firm, purely an outsider applying. The closest connection I really had was I worked in the same office park, so Hedgeye is in a certain building within this office park. I worked in another building And actually how I found out about Hedgeye was that they were moving from the New Haven office over to where we are today. And their coffee maker accidentally got delivered to our office park in our building. And so I
Really?
It. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I've told the story before, but it's just kind of funny how life works, right? They say opportunities knock softly, and then they really do, and you got to listen. So, and at the same time, you know, my boss was leaving, which the firm always says, "Hey, it's it's the firm's clients. We're fine." Yeah, well, we all know how that works. So, in reality, so the writing was kind of on the wall for me there, and this opportunity came, and so started off in the healthcare team with Tom Tobin, did a lot of good work there, learned a ton from Tom, really appreciate all of his guidance and the autonomy that he gave me to really kind of become the analyst that I am today, and focused on healthcare IT, kind of carved out my niche there, made some mistakes, learned from those mistakes, but kind of fine-tuned the process that I use today for communications, which we can talk about. But that's basically, you know, history. The rest is history, you know. I've been here for a long time. It's in kind of core to who I am. I wear the Hedgeye hat every single day, you know, because it's just, you know, like I said, it's how I think in terms of the process. And a lot of what attracted me to Hedgeye in the first place, frankly, was the fact that, you know, I was kind of this scrappy guy from a, you know, Midwestern school, which was good, but always, you know, had to kind of fight for everything that I had, and, you know, didn't have kind of like the academic background, you know. Anyway, so it was, you know, the values, the principles, also just the rate of change-based process was very consistent with how I kind of thought about what drives stocks early on. And, yeah, that's just kind of been awesome ever since, so... Unless you have any questions, I can go in the process, but that's probably enough background for folks.
Hi, Robert McGrory here, Director of Subscriber Development at Hedgeye. Join our entire research analyst team live before the market opens for deep dive investing analysis, our favorite stock ideas, and our risk manager-in-chief, Keith McCullough's macro overlay. Our team of 40-plus equity analysts discuss key market developments, trends, and our high-conviction long and short investing ideas. You will not get this granular level of insight anywhere else. A video replay, audio version, and analyst summary notes from the call are available shortly after each live show to ensure you don't miss anything.
Go to hedgeye.com/research to subscribe.
And tune in live to the call weekdays at 7:45 a.m. Eastern. Enjoy the rest of this episode.
I guess I'm in good company not going to an Ivy League school, eh, Freebird?
Yeah, you know, they're overrated, right?
Hold on, I lost communication. Hold on a second. But yeah, why don't we? Sorry, let me just figure out my sound.
Yeah, no,
if you don't mind, why don't we jump into the first slide? Again, you similar to how Keith presents on the macro show and the macro themes. You know, on the first, basically the process and a bit of the background. I know you deliver the same thing to your clients, and so I'd love to kind of just maybe start off with that slide too, Eric, if you don't mind, the communications research process, and I'll pass it off to Freebird here and let him walk through it.
Yeah. You know, I put these slides together actually back when I was in healthcare, and I just kind of retrofitted them for communications and been using them for the last 4 years. So it hasn't changed all that much. You obviously continue to refine things as time goes on. But there's really, you know, three key approaches. It's a top-down, bottom-up process. So first and foremost, focus kind of on idea generation. That could be, you know, thematic-driven, you know, based on industry trends. It could be macro driven, right, based off the quad calls. It could be policy driven, right? We have a policy team, Paul Glencher, who's an amazing analyst and a wealth of knowledge. You know, he's been very helpful in terms of understanding catalysts and forming investment ideas over time. You know, obviously the second point from that is focusing on second derivative inflections and trends, right? So it's not about the absolute, it's about the rate of change. It's not necessarily, you know, about the destiny, but the path of how we get there. And so, you know, the biggest, and with that, you know, the biggest mistakes I think I've made, the biggest mistakes I've made have really been just missing the forest for the trees, focusing on the bottom up first, missing the top down, not being macro aware. but also not being aware of how the company operates within the broader industry. And yes, you still do, comp analysis and try to do your typical competitive analysis, SWOT, whatever you want to call it. But really just kind of starting there and, relying too much on what management has to say without doing a ton of extra work on the entire ecosystem. And that's what I try not to do. So I spend a lot of time focused on understanding broader industry trends, not just from a qualitative standpoint, but actually, trying to measure and map it out and build out industry models, examine the unit economics of the industry. Where do I formulate an opinion on, where do I think the world's going to be 3 to 5 years from now within these individual sectors? And then within that sector or industry, which companies are most positively or negatively disposed to those prevailing trends? And that kind of formulates my tail duration thinking in many cases. Now, that doesn't mean that if I like something in the long term, I won't short it in the short term, right? That's kind of just how HedgEye works and the thinking works in that my space is highly cyclical, especially for the media space that's very advertising driven. And so there's often opportunities both long short as you're kind of navigating this longer term trend to get to whatever that future state is to make money on both the long and short side. And that's also supported by primary market research efforts. So lots of professional interviews with folks in the industry, speaking with operators, really just trying to get a grip on, what is driving the economics of the business and what are the factors that are going to be influencing things like margin? Because, if a business is getting better or worse, that's going to influence, not only where the company puts up results relative to consensus, but it's also going to drive your marginal buyer or seller of that security, which is why the rate of change is so important in that sense. And it's probably where I tend to add the most value, or I find maybe not actually add the most value. I say that's probably the most value add part of the process. It's also the most time consuming because you kind of have to boil the ocean to come to conclusions. But if you can figure out how to model the top line, right, then you can have a lot of conviction in terms of where everything flows through in terms of the P&L, because those are decisions that are made by humans. And I'm not saying that top line decisions aren't influenced by humans, right? But the reality is that management teams are incredibly biased and they're not always going to be thinking about their businesses in a way that's consistent with reality. And so if I can formulate an opinion independently of that, then I can flow that through my industry estimates, tie that back to the model and figure out if numbers are too high or too low, and then make an independent assessment of whether or not their capital allocation strategy is accurate, or if they're making certain investments in the business that I agree with or don't agree with, and what does that mean ultimately to the stock price. So bringing that back to the fundamentals, which is point two, CFA. I build out three statement models. Look at things like return on invested capital, free cash flow, operating leverage, focusing on the balance sheet. The valuation's always the last thing I do. I'm agnostic in many ways to the valuation methodology. I don't think, for some companies, a discounted cash flow model may be more appropriate. For others, it could just be the correlation to the growth rate of the company and the sales multiple. And then I think on that point, like just being factor aware and macro aware is incredibly important because it helps you understand what is going to matter to the stock price in what type of environment, right? So if you're in quad four, high leverage, high beta, high multiple stocks are going to get hurt the most versus if you're in quad one and quad two, it's going to be the opposite. And so you can frame your idea generation and thinking about, the relative valuation in that context, which increases your hit rate. And then outside of the macro, thinking about the catalyst calendar, the event path, and just the risk reward. What is going to unlock the value that I see, whether it's on the long or short side? What is going to be my catalyst? How do I get paid, right? The saying is that a cheap stock can get cheaper and an expensive stock can get more expensive valuation at, in and of itself is in a catalyst. So really trying to be mindful of what's changing and how is investor perception going to change in response to a change in the fundamentals, which I, you know, formulate that opinion based off of, you know, point one, but then also on the third point, being data-driven. So I'm a little bit of a data nut. I'm not going to get into all the details, but, you know, I've spent a lot of time with...
That's a slight understatement.
Yeah, I've spent a wait, like I probably like spent a lot of time just either whether it's like crafting surveys, collecting alternative data, government data, whatever. Like there's just so much and a lot of it's noise. And so I've you know, think I'm pretty good at figuring out where there's signal, just given all the time I've spent doing this. But really, you know, leveraging those data insights to try to, you know, gain conviction in the catalyst setup and also just trying to keep myself honest with the thesis, right? Because thesis drift is real. And, you know, look, I'm only human, but I like to think that, you know, if the facts change, if the situation changes, then I'll change with that. It's not always easy to do. And like I said, I will continue to make mistakes and we're always learning in that respect. But it is something that is very helpful, and you know, especially regarding estimate revision trends, which are a major driver of stock prices always, not just recently, always. We've just seen it be a much bigger factor recently because of the magnitude of the revisions and the, what drivers coming out of COVID. But it helps you within kind of this mosaic framework to, you know, really build conviction on what you think is actionable or what's not actionable. So that's kind of the process in a nutshell. I know it's probably a lot of buzzwords and threw a lot out there, but that's what I'm trying to do at least. And it's in my space, it's internet, media, cable, telecom. So it's kind of ripe with these kind of longer term thematic trends and also the shorter term cyclical dynamics.
Absolutely. And I know, you know, the data is such a huge component across HedgEye, right? And, you know, when I spoke with Tom, you know, he was talking about, you know, a lot of the data and kind of the new sort of the new structure that he's built around to help him sort of, you know, narrow down on better ideas, right? Ideas that apply to the quad. I know you've got, you know, you review, you know, third party data, you know, fundamental research data, and then some proprietary data itself. You know, do you find or have you found that there's one component there that you that helps you in terms of pivoting or shifting kind of, you know, either whether it be across your thesis or gaining more conviction or kind of realizing that, hey, this, you know, maybe we thought this was going to be a long or on the long bench, but really needs to be either in neutral territory or move to short.
It's a good question. I mean, I'll talk about it in context of that fundamental idea generation chart, which I've also been using for a long time, but I think it's, you know, good visual representation. I'm not sure what size is it on, 5?
Yes.
On slide 5?
No, 4, sorry. 4? General is 4.
4? Nope, the next slide.
The next one, yep, there you go, perfect.
So in terms of, like, you know, using data in that context, you know, look, I have a very large coverage universe, and there's always a call to be made, right? Because there's always a call that I'm making and getting right. There's always one that I'm getting wrong. There's always something that I'm not looking at that I'm missing, right? So it's all about trying to refocus my time, which is limited, right, in a way that kind of optimizes for a long short list, right, that gets us to the couple names that are going to have the best outperformance over a 12 to 18 month period and ones that are going to be short, right? So, you know, great example of that is like last year, like January, when the major telecom companies were getting hit going into this quad environment in context of everything else in the communication space and all of our concerns that we had in advertising and internet and media specifically. You know, T-Mobile stood out of the list mightily from a factor standpoint, from a fundamental standpoint, and also just relative to everything else, right? So what's also really unique to, I think, HedgEye and the process is that we can short companies. And maybe people don't think that's a real advantage, but you have to understand, like, when you're approaching an investment decision, right, and it's not just a do I go long it or not, right, and you could actually make a bet against the company and it going down, it absolutely changes your thought process and your threshold, right, for longs and shorts. And I've noticed this not just for me, but just like even when I was in healthcare and other sectors too over the years, it is like it just optimizes that, right? So, you know,
I
try to have like the best, you know, the top long. So like T-Mobile worked really well last year. Snapchat worked on the short side. You know, not to give too much away, we're going through this whole process now, and we're going to have our themes presentation next week. We're going to kind of talk about positioning and new ideas that we think are going to work going in, you know, the next 12 months, and hopefully get those right too. But the point I'm trying to make is like, when you know, right? And mm-hmm. So you stay on top of things, you update the data, you have your process. You know, going into last year, right, with like Meta, I was going through all the advertising data, and it was just very obvious. Like, I already thought estimates were too high, but tracking into Q1, the data was showing a very obvious sequential deceleration that was much larger in magnitude than what looked reasonable, you know, based off of both my industry checks, but also relative to consensus expectations and estimates. And also, you know, the list goes on and on and on. Now, we didn't have Meta as a long. I should have had Meta as a short earlier in the year, but at least I knew not to be, you know, pounding the table long Meta, you know, into that, right? So, and like, or like a Roku, right? The same example, like, get the hell out of Roku, right? Because the number one driver of that stock price is going to be their gross profit growth. And that is going to slow precipitously because, you know, the macro, the comps, but also the fact that, you know, there was a accounting adjustment in the prior year period that just made it extremely difficult for them, that and the street was mismodeling that. And also just being mindful of the environment that we're going into after COVID, that we were transitioning out of this growth at all costs type mentality to a more shift to profitability, a shift to, you know, slower growth that people weren't really expecting, and valuations were incredibly extended. And you know, when you know, execution, you know, is the hardest part, right? So a lot of you listening to this call either subscribe to HedgEye, maybe you don't subscribe to HedgEye and you're going to, you know, maybe you do your own research, you're at an institutional buy-side shop, or you're, you know, an individual that's, you know, making investment decisions and trading decisions like off of the research that we do. You know, for me, I think that my biggest struggle always is just the execution piece, right? Because I'm really good at figuring out trends and modeling, and, you know, telling you if the business is going to get better or worse, and usually positioning appropriately. But it's much harder just to also apply that, you know, to the execution point, because, you know, the reality is that you know, I was recently a one-man band. I finally have an analyst working with me, so that's going to free up some capacity. But the amount of mental you know, investment that goes into making sure you get the analysis right versus how you actually execute that, right, and make money on that idea in the markets, right, is kind of requires a different level of sophistication. And that is something that, you know, is not my mandate, right? And that's mm-hmm. why I think having Keith and the signaling process and the trends, right, him coming in and providing kind of that portfolio manager type of approach, right, looking at all of our ideas, is something that's, you know, really valuable, because it's basically how the buy side operates. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that's, I kind of just went on a little bit of a tangent there, Robert. I apologize. So
not at all. I think it's actually a good segue, and Andrew, just this is in the arena, right? So this is for paying subs only.
Hi, Robert McGrody here, Director of Subscriber Development at HedgEye. Hope you're enjoying our podcast. Start generating alpha with our suite of Sector Pro investing research products. Dive deep into retail, industrials, technology, and everything in between with exclusive access to the sharpest analysts and actionable ideas on Wall Street.
Go to hedgeye.com/research to subscribe.
Enjoy the rest of this episode.
There's, you know, the screening tools that we use, I've developed a sentiment score. I've tried to backtest it with the performance, but it's kind of hit or miss. It's more of like a risk management tool in that I rank order each sub-industry within the communication services space by short interest, sell side rank, relative value, and relative performance. And at its core, it's kind of a momentum screening model, but it kind of tells me which companies are consensus longs and consensus shorts. And so, for example, if we're going into a quad one or a quad two, and short interest as a style factor screens as a long, then I'll go to this list and I'll be like, all right, well, here are the most beaten up names in each of my space with the highest short interest. And which ones of those do I think have the most compelling fundamental case? And let's go there because they're likely to outperform. While on the flip side, a name that might be incredibly overowned or loved, may actually start to underperform, like a Google, for example. Now, look, it doesn't always mean that the names that people love and that are consensus longs aren't good longs. It could actually, those trends could continue, right? Because, being a contrarian is important to think differently, but it's also not, always required to make money in this game. I do think about kind of the sentiment score in the context of risk managing ideas on the position monitor, which is why there's a sentiment score next to all my individual stocks. It's a pretty important tool for me when I think about, again, names both long and short, and it factors in short interest, sell side rank, like I said, and relative earnings growth and valuation. So it's up on the screen.
We got it. Thanks, Eric.
Kind of ranked order by internet media services, entertainment, broadcast media. We're long some names that would screen as counter consensus shorts and vice versa. But it does help me understand, hey, back in 2021, right, when we were short Discovery before the merger and before the direct-to-consumer launch, we should probably cover this because, we're going into a quad one, quad two after the name's been beaten down. And so, let's just move on, right? Let's focus our, our research budget and time on something different.
Yeah. So, maybe can we go through, let's use T-Mobile as an example, right? Where you mentioned that one earlier, and it's kind of got an 81% sentiment rank there. So how should folks kind of think about that just from again, the 1 to 100. I mean, I obviously read it and have access to it, but yeah, could you go through kind of, did it influence your decision to put T-Mobile on as a buy at all, or is it just more like a kind of understanding where general sentiment is across the, within your sector?
Yeah. I mean, look, I think, we've been long T-Mobile for a while at varying degrees of conviction over time. Right. And if you look at T-Mobile, it screens as 100. So it's screens completely as a consensus long, which I have to be mindful of, right? Because it means that the threshold for outperformance is much higher if they miss numbers or if there's just less margin of error. And so it challenges my conviction, right? Whereas if it's something like an Altice, for example, in the cable satellite space, which is a name that we were short, no longer short. The leverage is extremely high, but I also understand it's a ball underwater. And that name, if it's highly shorted and it's been underperforming and left for dead, then, if we're going into quad two or a different, regime, then I got to be mindful of that. It could act, if the fundamentals improve just slightly consistent with that change in outlook, that it can double on me really quickly. So do I want to be short that, right? No, probably not. I mean, it actually be more interesting as a long. It is nuanced, right? But, you kind of have the whole process here. You look at it in this context, and then you apply that fundamental idea generation kind of framework that I mentioned before. You pipe in the macro, and you know, I think you have over time what's a pretty good you know, alpha generating process. You know, assuming that I just don't screw it up, right, on the execution part, which is the hardest part, right? Because there's that game within the game that we've kind of, we've probably heard us talk about before, where, you know, are you trying to thread the needle on expectations, right? Because if numbers already come down, but you're within 30 to 60 days of, you know, a potential bottom of your rate of change, and maybe estimates need to come down by another 400, 500 basis points, but you're also at a point where the stocks are down 70% over the last 12 months. Multiples have compressed to all-time lows, and the sell side's already negative, and short interest is really high, right? That's a much more, that's a very precarious position to be in if you're either still short and even if you're long, right? Because those are periods of peak uncertainty typically. And so you just have to be really flexible and be able to move quickly, you know, to new information. And that's also, like, as far as Keith and his signaling process goes, right? Like, you know, bullish trend, bearish trend names, like, they typically, they follow the fundamentals and they lead the fundamentals often. And so that's why it's so important to be mindful of, you know, that part of the process, because a lot of the time, you know, look, I'm not going to instill my will on the market, right? You know, I may have my fundamental view, but I will always respect the market in terms of price. And if it's something's going against me, I have to start asking myself what's wrong, what am I missing out here? And that's why Keith usually only, you know, goes with ideas that are from the analyst side, where the trend is consistent with, you know, the fundamental call, right? If I'm short something and it's bullish trend, you know, he's probably not going to hit the bid on it on the short side, maybe. Unless if it's maybe at the high end of his risk range, right? But that's maybe. But usually he won't go there.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a great example is Netflix. It's been bullish trend for a few weeks.
That signal, I hate that signal. I sit there and I think about Netflix and I'm like, the signal is better than me. Like, I know Netflix. I know that business so well. I know the model inside out. We've been so right fundamentally on the long-term outlook on that stock. But, like, in terms of just the shorter duration, 6 to 9 months, that signal, it mocks me.
So. Yeah, and recently Meta went neutral, right? So I think, you know, but Meta, Google, Netflix.
But that makes sense to me because Meta started hitting easier comparisons in November. In our last themes call and wrap call, we flagged that, right? And so when I say execution, right? You know, I still think numbers are too high for Meta, and the macro and the ad environment's tough. That's fine, but they also have easier comparisons. And so, you know, maybe I'll look back 6 months from now. I should have said, you know, instead of taking Meta down the list and indicating easier comps, right, and saying that we prefer to be short Google as a result of that versus Meta, and it's a theme we've been talking about for a lot top part of the year. Maybe I actually should have, instead of just taking it lower, I should have put it onto the long side, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's again, that's part of the execution side, part of the process that, you know, for me, is probably where I have the most to learn. And that's why it's great to be on a team. It's to have you, to have Keith, to have everyone else, because that's that part of the process, because, you know, it makes it a little bit easier to manage, I think, from a subscriber standpoint, hopefully, but...
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's yeah. So, Andrew, I just want to thank you for running through kind of your process to set up. I think there's hopefully, you know, Hedge Nation's gotten a great takeaway from this. Your call, it's not really a call, but your analysis and your data driven approach is absolutely top shelf. And we saw that throughout 2022. And really, I mean, the beauty of it is you were nails in quad one or quad two, I guess, coming out of COVID with Roku. I mean, you were absolutely, I think, that's kind of when I first joined, and that was a memorable one, at least in my PA as well. You know, that thing has a little bit of beta, a little bit of juice, especially back in that quad two environment of kind of Q2, Q3 of 2020. but you know, that was a heck of a call on the long side. And then you were obviously incredibly early, not early, but certainly had a contrarian view. And we saw that in many Twitter spaces that we participated in, especially in late 2021, going into early 2020, early 2022 with the comp space. And so, again, I mean, I just I guess, you know, yeah, if you're not paying attention to Freebird on Twitter, I'd highly recommend it. He's in spaces all the time. He's a great participant. I certainly learned I learned something from all the sector heads. But you know, you're very generous with your time and your energy with kind of, you know, the people out there, the folks that, you know, non-institutional buy side guys, and we all appreciate it within Hedge Eye Nation. So with that, you know, I want to really thank you, and thank you for sitting down with me. It's been a great second episode. Apologies that we've had a little bit of technical snafu, but we, just like everything in life, you know, we're grinders.
You got the comms analyst on, right?
That's right. It's, but we're like, grinders, man.
You know, I think it's, I actually think it's a curse, right? Remember, like, with the spaces, so many times my phone like cut out. It's it's just ironic. But anyway, thank you for those kind words, Robert.
Absolutely, buddy.
Yeah.
And yeah, so we'll so again, for those you know, for those that listen in live, really appreciate it. The replay is going to be available in the arena, and we'll be hosting another session with Sector Head. I'm narrowing it down. I'm not narrowing it down, but I'm seeing kind of availability for next Thursday. But we're going to be, you know, penciling Thursdays at 11:30, moving forward here throughout Q1 of 23. With that, have a great day, and remember, stick with your process and execute out there. Cheers.
Don't forget to check out hedgeye.com to get more actionable investing insights from our team of more than 40 research analysts. And check us out on Twitter at our handle, @hedgeye. This presentation is informational only. None of the information contained herein constitutes an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any security or investment vehicle, nor does it constitute investment recommendation or legal, tax, accounting, or investment advice by Hedgeye or any of its employees, officers, agents, or guests. This information is presented without regard for individual investment preferences or risk parameters and is general, non-tailored, non-specific information. This content is based on information from sources believed to be reliable. Hedgeye is not responsible for errors, inaccuracies, or omissions of information. The opinions and conclusions contained in this report are those of the individual expressing those opinions and conclusions and are intended solely for the use of Hedgeye subscribers and the authorized recipients of the content. All investments entail a certain degree of risk, and financial instrument prices can fluctuate based on several factors, including those not considered in the preparation of the content. Consult your financial professional before investing. The information contained herein is protected by United States and foreign copyright laws and is intended solely for the use of its authorized recipient. Access must be provided directly by Hedgeye. Redistribution or republication is strictly prohibited. For more details, please refer to the terms of service at hedgeye.com/terms of service.